Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
I want to have a conversation with you about a story that's in the news on the front page of the Tribune on Monday. You may have seen it as well, and I've been referencing it a little bit on the show today, just to kind of get you ready for the conversation we want to have. Friends rescue couple facing tragic decision while abroad. Fundraiser allows Chicago man to come home and die. And Robert McCoppin's story begins this way. Megan Quinn and Andrew Marciniak met on the mountainside in Montana, where she washed dishes and he waited tables at a ski resort. When she served in the Peace Corps in Grenada, he followed her there. Intensely in love, friends said, they married at a chapel on a lake in Ireland. They settled in Chicago, but asked as they told friends, what if we lived a life in which we did exactly what we wanted? That life was built largely on traveling the world and teaching children of all abilities and backgrounds. This fall, the couple moved to Columbia to work as English teachers. But their adventure suddenly ended there when Andrew had a severe allergic reaction, stopped breathing, suffered permanent brain damage. Doctors put him on a ventilator but said he was unresponsive. It's weird, too, because this happened in Columbia. And I guess in Columbia, the law is, it said that hospital officials told his wife the Colombian law prevented them from taking him off life support. That was their wish, since he was not considered terminally ill. So he would be kept alive in Colombia. To bring him back to the United States would cost them $50,000, money that they were able to raise on a GoFundMe page. Their credit cards, in fact, had racked up more than $75,000 in medical bills. That's one part of the story. But the other thing is, she could have said, well, no, I know his intention, his wish was for him to be taken off life support. But in Colombia, they don't honor that. And I was wondering, how is that played out in the United States, in Illinois? Mary Pat, let's see if this phone line is a little better. Are you still there?
I am.
Good. This sounds terrific. So you know the story, and I just sort of set it up. What jumped out at you when you first heard about this story? I mean, you must see cases like this now and again, right?
Once in a while, not tremendously often, thank goodness. My heart just went out to them. That was just such a terrible, tragic circumstance for them.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, you think about, you know, and they couldn't have done anything. They did everything they could. But here in the United States, most states do have some sort of a health care surrogate act that might have helped in that situation.
What does that
mean? Even where you don't have. So there's a couple of different things. Here in Illinois, we have actually written advanced directives that people can put into place. One is a health care power of attorney, where you actually get to name your agent to make your health care decisions if you're unable to do so. That form also allows you to specify what kinds of medical treatment you want and the circumstances under which you would want life-sustaining treatment to be withheld or withdrawn.
I see.
We also have a living will that you can execute that says, you know, this would come into play if your agent can't or won't act. Says, I can't, if my condition is terminal, I don't want to be kept alive artificially. So those are written directives. But we also have something called the Healthcare Surrogate Act. And that would allow, even where you don't have a written directive, a physician to look to certain people in your life to make your healthcare decisions, including medical treatment, and under some circumstances, the decision to withhold or withdraw life support. There's sort of a hierarchy of people that you can name or that are named in the statute.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad, because too often I think it's frustrating. It sounds like the laws don't reflect the common sense that all of us would like to see. And I think a lot of us, if you're not older, maybe you haven't thought about these things. You haven't literally filled out some form. You may have had this conversation with your family, but you haven't really filled out a form per se. But in the absence of that, Illinois law says, okay, then we'll just ask your husband or wife or whoever that person is in the hierarchy, and they get to make that decision.
Right. Your spouse, then it goes to your adult children, then to your parent, then siblings and to your grandchildren. And then the last people is the close friend, which is someone who's willing to give an affidavit that says that they're close enough to you that they know what your medical decisions would be.
Hmm. Do you recommend that people do just jot something down like this? I mean, would that matter to a court? Would that have any binding?
It would be helpful. I mean, the easiest thing to do is just download the forms. The Illinois Department of Public Health, they're free. You download them. You can print them off. They don't have to be typed up. You can handwrite them. Now, the healthcare power of attorney does have to be witnessed by one independent person, someone who's not named in the form and not responsible for your healthcare. But that's a very simple thing to do. If you can't do that, then yes, at least talk about it with your close family members so that everyone is on board. I mean, one of the problems with the Healthcare Surrogate Act is you can have more than one person in a category. For example, if you have two or three children and they don't agree on the parent's course of treatment, I mean, that can be problematic. It can cause a lot of conflict and pain at a very stressful time.
What happens in a situation like that?
Well, it's majority vote. But the one thing that can happen is if someone is disgruntled, they can go to court and try to get appointed as the person's guardian of the person. And the guardian of the person is the top given top preference for making those decisions.
Well, I wonder if the ending of somebody's life means a financial windfall for some of these people. If the siblings might say, well, I know why you're so anxious to do this. You want to get to the estate, right? That's a possible scenario, right?
There's all kinds of possible scenarios when it comes to families. There's all kinds of terrible things people say and do, and that's why it's a wonderful gift, really, to write these things down, appoint someone who's going to make the decision you would have made for yourself or the best one possible, and talk about your decisions and your wishes with that person.
Well, without commenting on anybody's specific situation, if you're confident the person's never going to regain consciousness or any kind of life to be appreciated, what's the point of keeping them on some artificial life-sustaining apparatus?
You know, John, people's emotions run the gamut. And especially in a situation where, you know, you're looking at your parent or a child or something like that, where you can't conceive of life without them, sometimes it's very difficult to make that decision.
What was the case that, was it in Indiana, a woman was, or Florida, she was, Ohio, where am I thinking of? Do you know the case? It was a woman, she was kept on life support for a very long period of time. The state was fighting with the family.
I don't know all the details of this case. I think you might be thinking of the Terry Schiavo case down in Florida.
Yeah.
She was a very young woman who had cardiac arrest at a young age, and she was not really on life support. She was conscious, but I don't remember all the details, but that was a very painful, and I believe it was actually her husband and her parents were fighting with each other.
Yeah, right.
Congress actually got involved and created a law.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was, but.
Right. And, you know, it seemed like she was responsive to things, but one, you know, and here again, I guess this is another conversation I would have with. It's hard to anticipate every eventuality, but I would say to my family, okay, so suppose I could live even without, well, I don't know, this is a different bailiwick, isn't it? If that's the life I'm going to live, I don't want to live that life, and I don't want you to have to live around me in that state. So even though I'm quote-unquote alive, I don't see the purpose of that. I don't suppose there's any means to end my life prematurely, though, right? We don't have anything akin to euthanasia in the state of Illinois.
Not in Illinois.
No. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, you may have a question or comment along these lines. Mary Pat Flaherty is on the phone line. This is what she does. And I've already got some texts from producer Olive here. We'll answer more of your questions next. Mary Pat Flaherty is an attorney in Western Springs who does the kind of work we're talking about. That is, if you want end-of-life decisions made on your behalf, how do you communicate those to people? It was referenced in a story in the Tribune the other day, and I thought, well, how many of us have actually, I think, Mary Pat, a lot of us in passing would say, I know how my parents, my spouse, or my kids, my friends feel about this. I know them. But if I don't have some handwritten or typed out form directing me, am I able to make a decision on their behalf? And again, if I understand correctly, you said, absent a written form, the courts in Illinois do then have a hierarchy of family and friends, and what was the order? Did you say the spouse is first on that list?
So it's not just the it's really not the court. It doesn't involve a court. The physician himself or herself can look to these people. So you don't have to get a court involved. The hierarchy is the court-appointed guardian of the person. So if you already have been to court and have a guardian of the person appointed, that yeah. person would be. Otherwise, spouse, then adult child, then parent, then sibling, then grandchild, then close friend.
That's interesting to me that the parents aren't first. I understand why the spouse would be. I mean, that's a hell of a decision to have to make, you know, even legislatively. But all right, the husband or wife would be first. What about if you're partners but you're not married?
Well, I suppose you'd have to go all the way down to the close friend category
wow.
for that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a really important point. You know, if you're in a situation like that, you definitely need a written advance directive.
Teresa, you're on
power of attorney.
Teresa, you're on WGN. What can we do for you? Hi.
Yes. I have a question. I do have a will, but if I wanted to change the executor on the will, do I have to go back to the attorney, or can I do it myself and just initial it and a date and have it notarized?
It's always best to consult with the person that created the document. I mean, I don't know anything about your estate plan, but I always feel that it's better to involve an attorney if you involved an attorney to start with, or even if you haven't, because, you know, we're trained to look at circumstances that you might not be thinking about.
Interesting question. Thanks for the call, Teresa. I hope that helps. Chris, you're on WGN. What was your question or comment?
Yes, my comment. This is regarding the DNR, the Do Not Resuscitate orders. And
yes.
We found out the hard way that the DNR, thinking that this takes care of, you know, the end-of-life situation, and at the request of the person, my mother and my uncle were revived because of blood transfusions. And we were told that blood transfusions are not covered in the DNR. So my question is, if somebody in all good knowledge, when they're alive and well, signs that do not resuscitate order, comes into this kind of a situation where they're brought back by blood transfusions. My mother was very, very upset.
Oh, really?
She should have died in surgery. And when she woke up, she was very upset because she felt her moment had been taken away from her.
Hmm. What a strange story. Mary Pat, any comment on that?
Well, I mean, so a DNR, or now it's called the Physician Order Regarding Life-Sustaining Treatment, that's actually between you and your doctor. So my understanding is if you, and you're probably right that the standard form might not say that. I'm not really that familiar with that because that's something that the doctor and the patient do together. My guess is that you might be able to specify that if that's your specific request. Also, anything that the patient has not specified on a DNR
right,
or POLSD,
right.
then your healthcare that falls back to the healthcare power of attorney. If you had specifically said on that form, I do not want blood transfusions, and somebody asked you, that's the thing, here she is in surgery, is someone going to come out of the of surgery and ask the agent? You know, it's hard to think of every possible, you know, scenario going into something like that, I think.
Yeah, but boy, that's, I guess, if you want to choose to think about that, all right, suppose I die on the operating table and massive blood transfusions will keep me alive and maybe bring me back to life. It sounds like her mother was able to communicate. Maybe she wasn't happy with the state in which she was going to live afterwards. But if you don't want even that level of extraordinary measure to keep you alive on the operating table, you need to tell your physicians that. Is that what I'm hearing from you, Mary Pat?
Yeah, and you know, you really need to speak with a medical professional, because I'm kind of wondering to myself, not being a medical professional, if someone said that to me, I don't know, wonder if I'd even do the surgery. You know, but that's a medical professional's judgment.
Chris, thanks for the call. This is Joe. What can we do for you, Joe? You're on GN. Hi.
Hi, how are you? I have a question. It's kind of a sad situation. I was adopted 57 years ago with loving parents and two brothers. My mother passed away a few years ago, and she was on life support, and seeing that my brothers took control of making the decision whether they should keep her alive or not, I disagreed. Then my brother passed away. Now there's just three of us, my brother and my father, who is 96. And my question is, as an adopted person, do I have any rights or say-so in the situation of in my father's living and his estate as well?
As far as I know, an adopted child who is legally adopted is the same as a natural-born child for these purposes.
Yeah. I would sure hope so. Joe, were you legally adopted? Like, do you have papers or documents like that?
No, I wasn't.
So they adopted you, quote-unquote, but not officially, not legally.
My mother was my aunt. And they adopted me when I was 3 months old. My biological father couldn't take care of me.
Okay, so they raised you. They raised you as their son, but you were not that per se. Okay, Mary Pat, the plot thickens.
And so you're asking me whether you have any ability to make your father's health care decisions under the statute.
Right.
You know, and I've not run into this situation before, but my guess would be if you're not legally adopted, you might not have that same those same rights as your siblings who were natural born. Now, you know, your father, if he's still competent, can write out a power of attorney for health care, appointing someone to make his health care decisions.
Oh, that's interesting. So while the son may not, or this man may not be able to dictate that, his father could, as long as he's competent. His father could say, I want this person to be a decision maker for me, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. I hope that helps, Joe. And Diana, we're short of time here. What's your question, Diana? You're on the air.
Thank you. I just had a question about, I had a pulmonary embolism and was rushed to the hospital, and they revived me twice. I was dead twice. I thought in my will there was something, I don't have it in front of me, about not maybe exactly do not resuscitate, and thank God they didn't know that, because here I am. But is there specific wording that you should have in your will? Because I got to dig it out now that you're talking about this.
This is an
subject.
Yeah, no kidding. I've got just a few seconds left here, Mary Pat.
Okay, so by the time someone reads your will, you're already deceased. So you need to have an advance directive, a health care power of attorney that you signed that is effective during your lifetime.
I'm out of time. If you have questions like this, contact somebody like Mary Pat Flaherty. And you said that some of this stuff you can do on your own, too. You can go online, get forms, and fill some of them out for some of the basic stuff. Right, Mary Pat?
Yes. The Illinois Department of Public Health, if you search advanced directives on that website, all the forms will come up.
It's nice to talk to you, Mary Pat. Thanks for your help this morning.
Thanks, John.
Have a good day. She's in Western Springs.